We are up to Perek Aleph Mishnah Beis. We are doing Masechet Shabbat. And our first Mishnah focused on the Melacha of Hotza'ah, taking things from one domain to another domain. And we discussed that Hotza'ah is Melacha Geruah, and that is why the Masechet opens with Hotza'ah. And now our Masechet is going to resume a standard order in tractates in Masechtot of the Shas, which is chronological order. Just like Masechet Yuma goes in the order of time, from the week before Yom Kippur, etc., up until Yom Kippur, through the day of Yom Kippur, so too, Masechet Shabbos is another one of those Masechtot that goes in chronological order, the order of time. The first Mishnah has a slight exception. And now, because we are going to discuss Erev Shabbos, so Mishnah Beis is introductory to Mishnah Gimel. In Mishnah Gimel, we will discuss Shabbos Friday afternoon, Erev Shabbos. And so Mishnah Beis discusses with us what happens on every afternoon. From every afternoon, we will move on to Shabbos afternoon. And we know that to Friday afternoon, correct. We know that in the Beit HaMikdash, there were two sacrifices that were brought every day, right? That every day of the year, Shabbos, Yom Kippur, Rosh Chodesh, every day of the year, there was a sacrifice brought in the morning with which we began our sacrifices. And Aleha Hashlem Kol HaKobanot Kulam, all the sacrifices were ideally brought after the Tamid sacrifice, before the afternoon sacrifice at the end of the day. The Tamid Shel Bein HaArbayim, the afternoon sacrifice, was supposed to be the sealing of the day. It wasn't always that way, but it was supposed to be that way. The ideal way things should run in the temple was that the Tamid Shel Bein HaArbayim was at the end of the day. Now, technically, the Tamid Shel Bein HaArbayim could be brought from the afternoon, from the beginning of the afternoon. But our sages told us that they didn't want to stop service in the Beit HaMikdash in the middle of the day. They want to let people bring Kobanot till the night. So they brought the Tamid Shel Bein HaArbayim by Plaga Mincha. Meaning, Mincha Ktana is when they would usually start bringing it. But by Plaga Mincha, they would definitely have it done. What is Mincha Ktana? So if we look at the day on a sundial, so the way a sundial works is you divide the day into 12 equal parts. So when Chazal discuss a day, when they discuss hours, they're not discussing hours the way we do it on a clock. They're discussing hours based upon daylight hours, where you take the day and you divide it into 12 equal parts, the way a sundial would. And then you have Sha'ot Zmaniyot, what today to us is unusual hours, up until the advent of clocks, was everyone's hour. 3 o'clock didn't mean 3 o'clock according to a 24-hour clock. 3 o'clock meant the notch three, after three divisions after noon. So when we look at 12 hours of daylight, when Chazal talked to us about hours, they're not talking about 60-minute hours. They're talking about 12 equal daylight periods. Now, obviously, that means the hour changes every day and every week and every month. So when we talk about hours throughout the Shas, we're talking about Sha'ot Zmaniyot, hours that refer to daylight hours, the way we just described. Now, eight and a half hours into the day begins Zman Mincha Ktana. So Mincha Ktana is 9.5 hours into the day. I'm sorry. 9.5 hours into the day. So if the daylight hours begin at 6 and end at 6, so that means that at 12 is going to be noon. That's 6 hours into the day. 3.5 hours later is going to be 9.5 hours into the day. That's 3:30. That's 2.5 hours before nighttime, before 6 o'clock at night when the sun sets. So, if we're going to take the simplest case, if the sun rises at 6 and sets at 6, so 3:30 is going to be Mincha Ktana. That's 2.5 hours before sunset. Now, half that time, half of 2.5, is 3:30 plus 1.25. That means 4:45 is Plaga Mincha. Halfway through this Mincha period is Plaga Mincha. Usually the Tamid Shel Bein HaArbayim was brought between Mincha Ktana and Plaga Mincha. By Plaga Mincha it was done. Plaga Mincha is 1.25 hours before sunset, before the end of the day. We're going to assume now that Sha'ot Zmaniyot are measured from sunrise to sunset. Obviously, that needs discussion, but to make life simple, that's what we will assume now. So, Plaga Mincha is 1.25 hours. It's halfway through Mincha Ktana. If Mincha Ktana is 2.5 hours before sunset, so Plaga Mincha is 1.25 hours. It's halfway into it. So it would be 4:45. Correct. So now, our Mishnah discusses the obligation that a person has to pray the Minchat prayer. We know that there were three prayers that every Jew prayed every day, starting from Moshe Rabbeinu. Every Jew prayed three prayers a day. Avraham Avinu instituted Shachris, Yitzchak Mincha, Yaakov Mayriv, and then Moshe Rabbeinu basically set us up to daven. It wasn't so set up until the time Nanshek Nestak Dola, the exact version of what we say. But when Moshe Rabbeinu instituted the 100 blessings that every Jew has to say every day, part of that was also three times a day you say Shmona Esrei. So the prayers were aligned with the sacrifices. The Mincha prayer is aligned with the Tamid Shel Bein Arbaim. I'm just reminding those of you who don't know, everything we say, I try to say according to someone. But obviously everything I say is not according to everyone. You can't dance every chasana. So I have to go with someone. We're going with an opinion. Sometimes it's Rashi, sometimes it's Tosus, what we just said happens to be the Sefer HaManig. Doesn't matter. We're going with an opinion. We're not learning halacha, so we're going to work with the opinion that makes it easiest to understand the Mishnah. Our goal is to understand the Mishnah. You'll learn the Gemara, you'll start from scratch. You learn the Mishnah on your own, start from scratch. Right now our goal is to understand the simplest understanding that will help us to have a good shot in the Mishnah that will stay with us for life. That's our goal. So we pray the Mincha prayer. We could pray the Mincha prayer from noontime, from the afternoon, until nighttime. And that Mincha prayer corresponds to the Tamid Shel Bein Arbaim, the afternoon Tamid sacrifice. So we have an obligation to pray this prayer. Chazal knew that if you get busy with other things, you might miss that prayer. That's the way people are. The afternoon Mincha, think of today, Shkia was 4:40, right? We're holding the shortest days of the year. If you don't stop your life and say, I'm going to daven now, you could easily miss it. So the Mishnah tells us all kinds of things Chazal said don't start doing until you've davened Mincha, because these are things that could easily become long things. Now, in the understanding of our Mishnah, there are two opinions in the Gemara, and there are two opinions in the Rishonim how to understand the Mishnah. Most people sitting here are Ashkenazim, right? Yes, so we'll learn the Mishnah the way that the Halacha is paskin by Ashkenazim. Sorry. So you should know that for Sfaradim it's more stringent than the way we're learning. Sorry. Our Mishnah says, Lo yeshev adam lifnei hasapar samuch lamincha ad sheyitpalel. A person should not sit down before the barber when it's near mincha time, when we know that mincha begins at 6:30, but usually people daven mincha ktana. So once you hit, we said, let's take the prime example, 6 o'clock is sunrise, 6 o'clock is sunset, 3:30 is mincha ktana, 4:45 is plaga mincha, right? You remember our introduction. So from 3:30 starts mincha ktana, and whenever we encounter the word samuch in the Mishnah, it means a half hour before. Samuch in Mishnah and Gemara language means a half hour prior. So our Mishnah tells us, a half hour prior to mincha time, from 3 o'clock in our example, if mincha time, mincha ktana starts at 3:30, from 3 o'clock a person should not sit down to take his haircut. Until he daven mincha, then sit down and take your haircut. Because who knows, maybe the haircut will take long, maybe the barber's scissors will break until he finds a new pair of scissors. So Chazal say, don't sit down, take a haircut near mincha time. And if you're taking a fancy haircut especially, there was a tisporet ben elasa. Rebbe had a son-in-law, so his father-in-law is a very wealthy man, Rebbe Yudan Nasi, right? We say one of the greatest wealthy Jews was Rebbe Yudan Nasi. So Rebbe Yudan Nasi had a son-in-law who spent a lot of his money trying to discover how the Kohen Gadol got his haircut. It was a special haircut that was almost bald. One hair would have to be the exact length that it reached the root of the next hair. That was the haircut of the Kohen Gadol. So it was, the Navi says, they shave their heads like horses. The Navi says in Yecheskel. So Ben Eloso, who was Rebbe's son-in-law, he spent a lot of money hiring barbers to try and figure out how they could cut his hair exactly like the Kohen Gadol. He wanted to figure out that haircut. So our Mishnah says, if you're going to go to get a fancy haircut, and you're going to go to the best hairstylist, and he's going to be just in the middle. You're going to have half your head shaved, and it's going to take him another 3 hours to finish your haircut. So who knows how long it'll take? Mishnah says, don't sit down to take this kind of haircut at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when Shkia is at six. Don't do it. Samuch la mincha, near mincha ktana, till you pray. And Sfardim will learn the Mishnah to mean, even at the beginning of the day, even a simple haircut. Sfardim are very machmir. Yeah, that's how Ashkenazim would learn. Lo yikanes, even though we don't learn halacha here, but a little bit, we could learn the Mishnah in the direction of halacha.
Sorry, regarding Yom Shishi?
No, this is on any weekday.
On any weekday?
Any weekday. Lo yikanes adam la mechatz. If you're going to go into a bathhouse, and in Chazal's time, when you did a bathhouse, you took a hot bath and a cold shower, and then you sat down to rest, and you sat in the heat and the steam, and you sweated up, and then you dried yourself down, and you caught your breath, and it was a whole shebang. So the Mishnah says, don't go do that also from 3 o'clock, from near the time of Mincha Ktana. The Lola Bulsiki, and if you have a whole bunch of hides that you're going to work in the tannery, in the hide factory, don't go into start doing that, because that stuff that's very delicate, you have to have it sit exactly the right amount of time, take it out of the acid at the right amount of time. So hide, leather. You're going to work your hides, so don't go into that the hide factory that you're working your hides on samuch lamincha. Velo lechol, and don't sit down for a big fancy meal if you're coming to a chasana and they're going to sit down for this huge meal. Who knows how long it'll take? The Mishnah says don't do that near mincha ktana. Velo ledin, and if you're going to judge a court case, people come before you. So you say, wait a second, gentlemen, let me down mincha and then let me hear what you people have to say. But in all of these instances, let's say you started doing it. Let's say the barber already put his apron on you. Let's say you started taking off your coat to go into the bath. Let's say you put on your gloves to deal with the hides. Let's say you undid your belt to sit down and eat the meal. Let's say the judges put the talis over their head to start focusing on the court case. They don't have to stop. Everything I just said is the Gemara. That's the gather of imitzilu and the Gemara. The imitzilu, if you started any one of these things, so then in masakin, you don't have to stop what you're doing, because we say, chances are you'll catch mincha. We're assuming you'll stop for mincha. And we don't want you to start, because who knows what'll happen. But if you started, we trust you, you will make mincha.
Are you allowed to miss mincha?
No, you're not allowed to miss mincha, no. Mafsikin, nikot, kriyachma. If you have people who learn Torah their whole lives, and they're not worried about their parnasa, they don't stop their learning for anything. So even in the times of the Tanoim, these were exceptional people. People like that, they still have to stop their learning in order to reach Shema. Then mafsikin l'tfila. But they don't have to stop their learning for davening. Once a day, they catch their davening, they do their chiyuv tfila d'oraita. But the chiyuv tfila d'rabanan, being that they're so focused on learning Torah, and they don't stop their learning for anything. They don't even stop for parnasa, so they don't have to stop for the takana drabanon of davening three times a day. And in the times of the Mishnah, these were the exceptional people, like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, people like him. Even in the times of the Mishnah, there weren't many. So certainly in our day, we don't have anyone like that. So let's review what we saw in this Mishnah. The last part of the Mishnah, yeah, tells us that these people, the last part of the Mishnah discusses people who are learning Torah, and they learn Torah all day. Like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, when he's sitting in the cave, he's not going out to do any work. All he's doing all day and all night is learning Torah. So he's sitting in a cave for 7 years, and he's learning day and night. So the Mishnah tells us, people like him, who don't stop their lives, they don't stop their learning for anything. They're not at home with their wives, they're not doing parnasa, they don't, nothing. They're learning all day and all night. Someone who doesn't stop to do work, someone who doesn't, Toratan umanutan, their livelihood is Torah, that's all they know. They still have to stop their learning to reach Shema. When Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was in the cave, so he got out of his hole in the morning to put on his clothing to reach Shema, and at night to put on his clothes to reach Shema. Then mafsikin l'tfila, but they don't have to stop three times a day to daven, only once a day to do the chiv d'oraisa of davening. But they don't have to stop three times a day to daven.
Today?
No. Today we don't have anyone on that level. If Alvai, we should have someone like that.
There are people that study all the time.
They study all the time because they don't have to stop to make ends meet. But they're not on Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's level of studying all the time.
So you mean it's not just
Okay, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how exactly to say it. No. I don't know. Twice a day for Kriyat Shema, because twice a day is the Oraisa, by morning and by night. It's one mitzvah to say the Oraisa, according to the Rambam. Yeah.
The mincha that they're talking about in the Mishnah is Mincha Gedola, but you're just saying that Ashkenazim Paskin that the
Ashkenazim learn the Mishnah the way I said, that we're talking about Mincha Ktana, and we're talking about all these convoluted cases that would take a long time. Spardim Paskin, that according to the opinion that explains the Mishnah, that it's talking about Mincha Gdola, and it's talking about a simple haircut, and it's talking about not Tispoet Ben Elasai, it's talking about a simple haircut, not a whole leather hide factory, but he's going in to check on what's happening with his hides, not a wedding meal, but a regular lunch, not a whole court case, but they're just coming in to look over a case that they've decided on. Svardim are very machmir. They go with the more chumrah opinion.
That
don't start eating. Daven mincha. And then you should do mincha before you sit down for a meal.
So
I'm not saying it's problematic. That goes into the halacha question, which we can't go into. The general understanding is this. Thursday night, we'll discuss it. What?
And if you're a doctor?
And Thursday night, sorry. Too many details, not a yes or no answer. It depends on this and that and other things. If it were yes or no, I'd tell you. Mishnah Gimel. Mincha Gdola, so we say from 6:30, from a half hour after Chatzot, because we don't know how to tell exactly. Remember, Chatzot is 6 hours into the day, right? It's a 12-hour day. So, right, 12:30, right. 6.5 hours into the day. Right. Okay, Mishnah Gimel. So now we're starting to discuss Friday afternoon. Mishnah Bet focused on every afternoon. Yes.
Hello.
I'm with you, yeah.
Where does it imply in the Mishnah? Where do we learn out that it's talking about Daven Mincha?
Gemara, Braisa, Tosefta. Okay. Mishnah Gimel. Lo yitzeh hayat b'machato samuch l'chashecha. If you have a person, his job is that he is a chayat. He is a tailor. And as a tailor, he wants everyone to know he's a tailor. So what does he do? Whenever he walks around town, he has his needle plucked in his clothing so that everyone can see him. Everyone can see his needle. So whenever he walks around, it's like a guy who's a carpenter, he walks around with his belt with the hammer hanging. A guy who's an architect, he has a pencil behind his ear. Each person has the things he carries. A policeman carries his gun in his holster. So there are different tools that people of the trade carry in a unique fashion. So the chayat, the tailor, it was customary that he would walk out with his needle stuck into his shirt. And the person who was a scribe, the person who was a sofer, everyone knew if they had to write a contract, they'd go to him. So he'd walk with his kulmus, which was a reed that they used to write with, kane. He'd walk with that behind his ear, and everyone knew that he was a sofer. So this way of carrying things is called uman derech umanuto, a professional, the way professionals carry this object. If I walk out with a needle stuck into my shirt, so even if I do it on Shabbos, that's not the normal way for me to carry a needle. So I'm not doing the malacha in the normal fashion, and therefore it is not an isul d'oraita. But if, it's a shinui. That's not the normal way to do the malacha. But if a tailor walks out with the needle stuck into his shirt, the way he does all weeks that people will see him, so that's a machloket tanaim. Do we say, uman derech umanuto, a professional, the way professionals carry their utensils, that if he does it, it's an isur d'oraisa or not? So this is a machlokas Shulchan Aruch and Gra, how we paskin. So our Mishnah says, Lo yetzei achayat b'machato. The tailor should not go out with his needle stuck into his shirt. Samuch lechashecha. Samuch, we said, is when? Half hour, chatzi sha'a, near nightfall. Shema yish... Shera tova. Shema yishkach v'yetzei. Because we're worried, maybe he will forget that it's stuck into his shirt. And then when it comes Shabbos, he'll walk out with it. And then he'll be over on Inisa Doraisa, because it might happen that he'll look at it and he'll see, ah, this is here, and he'll walk out and forget it's Shabbos. Or he'll see that it's there and he'll walk out and he'll forget it's Asur to take it out to Rishus HaRabim. So we say, this tailor, we don't want him to walk around once it gets near Shabbos, once it gets near the afternoon, the night of Shabbos, he's not allowed to walk around, he's not allowed to walk out with this needle stuck into his shirt. Samuch l'chashecha, even close to nightfall, shema yishkach, lest he forget that it's Shabbos, or he forgets that it's Asur to walk that way, the Yetzei, and he goes out, and then he does an Isur Doraisa, so Chazal made a gzera, don't do it on Friday afternoon. So here we have a Stam Mishnah that tells us that if he were to do it on Shabbat, what would it be? An Isur Doraita. Because if it were an Isur Drabanan, we wouldn't make a gzera Friday afternoon because of an Isur Drabanan, right? If on Shabbos it would only be an Isur Drabanan, then we don't add a gzera on Shabbos for an Isur Drabanan. So this Mishnah is a very strong proof that we pass in Uman Derech Umanuto Chayam Chatan. That it's a biblical prohibition. Let's just read one more line. Velo alavlar bekul muso, and also the lavlar is a sofer, a scribe. He also should not go out with his pencil, with his reed that he writes with. He should not walk out with that behind his ear on Friday afternoon. Yes. Another halacha. Our Mishnah tells us, lo yefale et keilav velo yikra l'or haner. Now we're in Friday night, so a person has lice or nits in his clothing. You guys should never know from this. So he wants to wear those clothing. But, like some Namuraim said, he has these enemies in his clothing. They're biting him all the time. So he takes off his clothing and he starts plucking out the lice. So our Mishnah says, when you're plucking out lice from your clothing, you need good light to make sure, is this dust or is it light, or is it lice? So Chazal said, when you're doing it, don't do it by candlelight, because their candlelight, ner, is an oil lamp, like you see in the pictures. And in order to make the lamp shine brighter, what they used to do all the time is tilt the lamp. So they were accustomed, when they were learning, if they couldn't see, is this a ches, does it say acher or echod? Is it a dalit or a resh? What's the difference between dalit and a resh? The difference is there a point or is it circled? The foot that we add is our minog, but that's not the difference halachically. The difference between a dalit and a resh is it pointed? Is there a point or is it circled? What's the difference between a beis and a kaf? A beis has a point and a kaf does not have a point. We make the dalit and the beis have a heel. But technically it doesn't have to have a heel. Technically, halachically, a kosher beis is that it's got points. A kosher kaf is that it doesn't have points. A kosher dalid is that it has a point on the top right side. A resh is that it's curved on the top right side. That's the difference between a dalid and a resh. So he's reading and he tries to see, they'll say echad or acher. So what they'd always do all week long is, they'd always have their hand by the lamp and they tilt it to get better lighting. Let me see, what does it say? Echad or acher. So this guy, what's he doing? He's checking his clothing for lice. We know he's going to have to get a good look at the clothing. He's looking for something very small. What's he going to do without thinking? He's going to tilt that lamp. That's what he does all week. That's what he's used to doing. So Chazal said, "Lo yefalet keilav ve'lo yikra l'or haner." Don't you check your clothing for lice, and don't read books near the oil lamp. Fale is to take out the lice. Correct. Correct, yeah. This is on Shabbos itself. Friday night, he shouldn't do this. And in a minute, we'll see why. I think this will have to leave for next time, why the Mishnah mentions it here. How come we're skipping into Friday night already? Be'emet amru. We'll define this in a minute. Our sages told us, Hachazan roeh hechan atinokot koreim. the one who teaches the children, the Rebbe, could see where the kids are reading in the parsha, avalu lo yikra, but he shouldn't read along with them. He could show them, here, start here, but if he reads with them, he might tilt the oil lamp. But they aren't worried about getting a better look at the reading. They're hoping it'll go out. That's what the Yerushalmi says. The children are praying it should, the light should go out and they could go home. So we're not worried about them making the light any better.
We're not going to assume the students are good kids.
So the Bavli says, we'll assume the students are good kids, but they don't dare touch that lamp when the Rebbe's around without his permission. So
are we saying he may show them where to start reading?
He could show them where to start reading. He could see where they're up to. But he himself cannot read along. He has to go by heart. So we said, you're not supposed to read by the oil lamp. You're not supposed to read by the lamp. But our sages told us, the Rebbe who's in shul, he could tell the children where to read, but he doesn't read along with them. Now what does it mean, be'emet amru? So we'll get back to them in a minute. No, we'll explain that now. What does be'emet amru mean? So usually, be'emet amru means we have on tradition, halachal Moshe Sinai. Be'emet amru means this is something that we have all the way from Moshe from Sinai. But it doesn't always mean that, because over here it's Gzera Drabanan. The whole prohibition to read by an oil lamp is Gzera Drabanan. So you can't make a halachal Moshe mi Sinai about Gzera Drabanan. So over here it doesn't mean that literally. It doesn't mean it's all the way back to Moshe to Sinai. It has to mean something similar to that. So here we see that Be'emet Amru doesn't always have to mean it's all the way back to halachal Moshe mi Sinai. So that's a good question. We say that wives, the candles that we light, that usually if you're married your wife lights, so we say those candles you don't gain anything by tilting. So it would seem there's no prohibition. Try it and see. By oil, when you tilt the oil, so the oil comes to the wick better. By a candle that's lit
those
in
days,
what?
Those days they
their lamps were oil lamps. He's asking about a candle like our candle where the wax is glued onto.
If they had a candle like ours those days.
Good question. So that we have to discuss in the Gemara, and not even in the Gemara, that's a Tosfos. Let's continue. Kayotze bo. You guys are asking good questions, but we're only doing Mishnah. What can I do? Kayotzebo, just like Chazal told us that we have to distance ourselves from Avira, and we're not allowed to check our clothing for lice or read next to the oil lamp, our sages told us another thing. Lo yochal azavi mazava mipenei hergel Avira. If a husband and wife, he's a zav, he has this flow, even when he's not hard, something white flows from him, it's like semen, but it isn't semen, that's called a zav. And she has this flow that looks just like her period, but depending on the days it comes, so that it could either be her period, or it could be zava, a flow that's not her period. It looks just like her period, but halachically we say that's not a nida, that's a zava. She's flowing. Zav means to flow. So when he's a zav, he has no problem living with his wife. A zav is allowed to live with his wife. The only problem is that a zav physically is ill, and he won't want to do it. Because it's not a situation where it's easy for him to live with his wife. A zava, a woman who's flowing, so it's a biblical prohibition to live with her, just like a nida. A zava, nida, same thing. It's biblically prohibited for them to have marital relations. So our Mishnah tells us that our sages said another thing. We know they're not going to live together. The Torah says it's a suh. But what happens if they sit down for supper together? They're going to have a romantic dinner. They're going to put down chicken on one plate. He'll take a bite. She'll take a bite. He'll take a bite. She'll take a bite. They won't touch. Not allowed to touch her. But they'll eat together. Chazal said they can't even eat together. So what does it mean? They can't eat together unless they make a sign. If it's only him and her, so they cannot eat from the same plate, and they cannot even eat on the same table unless they make a sign. So what could be their sign? They're eating, he's eating his chicken here, she's eating her chicken there, and they put a bag of sugar on the table and they say, this is our mechitza, this is our reminder that we're prohibited from being together. We're going to do something as a sign, because to just simply sit down and eat together, Chazal said, you're not allowed to do it. And this is halacha today. When a couple are prohibited, when she's a nida, so they're not allowed to sit down and eat together. If it's only them at the table, we're worried. You sit down and eat together, so things might evolve, and who knows what will happen. So you put something on the table as a sign to remind them. You could put down your watch, but you designate it. It doesn't have to be a mechitza. She's sitting at her place, he's sitting in his place. We put down something that we both agree is going to be the sign that reminds us that we're not allowed to get carried away by this meal. So now, like all of Ilchot Nida, even though you're not chatanim yet, but if we touched on it, so there's an important point we have to see here. Sometimes people learn the laws of family purity and they think, oh, what's the Torah telling me not to do? But we have to see the opposite side of it too. What's the Torah telling me yet to do? The Torah is telling me that when we're permitted, when she's tahor, he's not a zav, she's not a zavah, even if he is a zav, there's no issur, they could live together. A zav is allowed to be with his wife. It's just not, it's not so easy for him to do it, because he's ill. But he's allowed to. So, the Torah is telling us that when they're pure, and they sit together, their relationships should be so great, that we assume that who knows where it'll lead. Because when they sit down to eat a meal together, you know what it means for a husband and wife to sit and eat a meal together? It's supposed to be sparks flying between them. It's supposed to be a beautiful thing. So we have to learn from the Mishnah what we're prohibited to do, but we're also supposed to learn from the Mishnah what a meal is supposed to look like when one is sitting down with his wife. There's supposed to be affection there. A husband has to know how to show that affection. Yeah. Okay.
What's the kesher?
The kesher is, this is another thing that Chazal said, distance yourself from Avera. You might say, I'm reading the book. I'm going to come to tilt the lamp. Chazal said, yeah, you're reading the book, you'll tilt the lamp. You might say, I'm sitting for the meal with my wife. What's going to happen? Chazal said, you're sitting, just like when you read, you come to tilt without thinking about it. If you're sitting and eating together, and there's good relationship going between you, so who knows where it can lead. Yeah.
There were hundreds of such examples.
Okay, you're right. You're right. It needs more definition. What the exact resemblance is. Why is this kayotzeva?
I'm not sure I understand what it means for why a man would be pulled from the discharge. The discharge is considered a wet discharge.
No, this is a different type of discharge. This isn't semen. This is that he has some type of internal infection, something that's causing him to emit. They say it might be gonorrhea. Gonorrhea fits some of the descriptions of Zav. Just like this.
Why do we have to mention Zav at all?
The idea is that even though it's difficult for him to do it, so you might think, if he's ill, why do you have to tell him to stay away? Even when he's ill and she's ill, neither one's in the mood practically, Chazal still said they shouldn't eat alone. They shouldn't eat alone in a normal fashion. They have to do something to distance, that they should to distance themselves, not to come to sin.
In such situation, the husband was in the situation, and the other things were married, would the wife be allowed to be alone in the same area and take care of him?
To be alone, so let's leave that for Thursday night. The answer seems simple, but I want to make sure I know what you mean by your question. So let's leave for Thursday night.
I'm leaving.